Karma Yoga in its perfection is full bhakti. All the activities are for Krishna's pleasure. In its beginning phases, Karma Yoga means some of the results of what you're working for, you sacrifice for the Supreme. So, Arjuna is still skillfully trying to avoid the battle of Kurukshetra, trying to avoid his devotional service, by saying that, Krishna, you've stressed so much retiring into a quiet place and analyzing material nature with your intelligence. Therefore, how can you want me to fight? So in today's verse he's saying, my intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Equivocal meaning ambiguous, not clear, having more meanings than one. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me. So he says, my intelligence is bewildered by your ambiguous instructions. And that's not good because you stressed so much in the previous chapter using your intelligence in Buddhi Yoga. You've stressed so much using your intelligence to extricate yourself from material existence, to know the difference between matter and spirit, between what is temporary and what is eternal. So I appreciate that you, Krishna, have really pointed out the proper and skillful use of intelligence, but my intelligence is bewildered because you're not explaining things clearly enough for me. It definitely seems like you're favoring inactivity, yet at the same time you're always urging me to fight, so I can't figure this out. So please be more clear about it. This is the duty of a real disciple, to approach the spiritual master with any kind of confusion. You remember that in the beginning, Arjuna and Krishna started off in a friendly relationship. And it was not until Arjuna surrendered himself as a disciple that Krishna began his very grave and weighty instructions. So, it was a momentous occasion when a friend decided to become a student, and Krishna immediately took up the responsibility of spiritual teacher. So Arjuna is behaving correctly. He's presenting his doubts to Krishna. That's all right. But after presenting the doubts, the student should accept the answer. Otherwise, what's the use of having a spiritual teacher? What is the use of having a spiritual director if you don't take the answer to the question? It is not unusual in this world to be bewildered. It's not unusual to have doubts. It's not unusual to be a little confused about spiritual progress. But once you ask, then you should accept the answer. Of course, seeing that one has a problem, that is 50% of the battle. If you know you have a problem, you can see it, then to a certain extent that is Krishna's mercy. That means your vision is a bit intact. Your vision is helping you, that you see you have a problem. Now, of course, you want to solve the problem. And to do that, you approach higher authority. You approach Krishna, Krishna's representative, and place your problem on the table. It is like this. It is like that. It seems to me that you're saying such and such, but then again, you say such and such, so I really can't put all these things together. So you please clarify it more. A disciple, student, has that right, but once the situation is clarified, then you have to act on what you're told. Otherwise, you lose all credibility as a student, as a disciple. And things become like a theoretical exchange, you pose an intellectual question and you hope you're going to get an intellectual answer back, implying no commitment, implying no surrender. Probably all of you have witnessed questions like that, where a disciple will ask his or her spiritual master a question, and then they'll get a very clear answer back, but the disciple will try to intellectualize about it rather than accept the direct impact. The disciple will try to create a metaphysical issue out of it, in this way avoiding the fact that he or she has to do something. Our disease is that we don't want to give everything to Krishna. Our disease is that, especially in Kali Yuga, we are lazy about purification. Kali Yuga means the atmosphere is saturated with lust. The atmosphere is saturated with greed, envy. How can we be lazy about our purification in such an atmosphere? There's no question of standing still. As soon as you stop your efforts to go uphill, you'll be swept away by the modes of material nature. Sometimes I know devotees think that, well, if I just step back a bit from devotional service, if I just withdraw a bit from the devotional center of activities, then I'll be able to get myself together. If you back away from devotional service, if you withdraw from the place where devotional service is being arranged, then you can be guaranteed that you'll be swept away by the modes of material nature. You'll become victims of passion and ignorance. But we have to be mindful of what the prevailing winds are. Just like everybody in Christchurch knows about southerlies. So, similarly, we should all know about the prevailing winds, the modes of material nature. We cannot stand still. The modes of material nature are not static. They are always acting. Maya is dynamic. The energy of illusion is active and is always pulling us deeper, trying to pull us deeper into its clutches, and then covering us over more and more. Sometimes devotees think that I will just go a little bit into Maya and hold it right there at that point, and then at the right time I will just bounce right back into my spiritual full glory. This is what I call the submarine theory. You know, the submarine, in order to go under the water, takes on some ballast, you know, takes some water into its tanks, and the submarine sinks down to a preordained level. It goes down 500 meters under the surface of the ocean and holds right there. So many times, unfortunately, our devotees think, I'll just go into Maya a little bit, and I'll hold right there. I won't go any further. Sometimes it's necessary to give in to the illusory energy, just to learn by experience, and then at the right time, I'll bounce right back into the swing of things. No problem. So the illusory energy beckons you. Yes, my dear Prabhu, just come down a little bit. Not too far now. I know you're a devotee. I know you want to surrender one of these days. So just come down a little bit into my grips. Not too much. I know you're very sincere, so you should just come down a little bit under the surface and hold it right there. I promise you, I won't drag you any further. Why? Because I am Maya, your dear friend, since time immemorial. Just take on some ballast. Just take on some material desires. Drop a little bit under the ocean, and I promise you, you'll be safe. You'll hold it right there. Everyone else has done this before you. It's been all right with them, believe me. They've held it right there with no problem. Okay, so you sink down. You know, after all, you've been trying to be austere for a few years, you know, and it's probably been causing you some problems, making you a bit uptight. You know, you've been doing service and, it's probably caused you some problems, emotional service. So, you know, you got to take on some ballast and just, you know, become well-rounded by moving a bit away from the devotees, so you have time to kind of look at yourself and understand yourself, you know. See yourself for what you are by the grace of illusory energy. If you're around the devotees all the time, how can you ever understand who you are? You won't be able to see yourself properly. If you're always reading Bhagavad Gita, you're just going to not be able to relate to yourself in a natural way. So, down you go a little bit. And of course, you know what happens. The forces of illusory energy start to pull on you. Come on down another 500 meters. I promise you, you will definitely hold there. And you think, well, I went down 500. What's another 500? You know, after all, I mean, in no way am I going to be a gross materialist. In no way am I going to lose it completely. But sometimes you have to go through these phases. Everybody will understand. Okay, another 500 meters. So down you go, another 500. And before you know it, especially when you're least expecting it, the illusory energy just grabs hold of you and pulls you all the way down to the bottom. And you wonder, how did this happen? And then you, every once in a while, you come and visit the center, come and see the deities, come associate with your former Prabhus who you were seeing all the time, and you can't even explain yourself then how it happened. Just, hey, you know, I guess I've just really got out of it, and I guess it's just what I got to go through. How it happened? We put our faith in the illusory energy instead of putting faith in Krishna. Putting faith in Krishna doesn't mean you're like a sentimental Christian. I believe in Krishna. You believe in Jesus? I believe in Krishna. Faith in Krishna means faith in devotional service. The more we are absorbed in devotional service, the more realization of Krishna we'll have, and the more safe from Maya's clutches we'll be. So, we don't want to have any kind of sad stories to have to tell. We don't want to become a sad story ourselves. And we want to be able to help our god brothers and god sisters who have been dragged down very deeply by the illusory energy. In order to help them, we ourselves have to be convinced of the wonderful super excellence of devotional service. Devotional service is so wonderful that it even conquers Krishna himself. And a temple like this one is a rare place in which opportunities for devotional service abound. So, the more that devotees are always acting, how can we do more, or how can we do better what we are doing, the more you'll feel spiritual ecstasy in the atmosphere. And the more we're trying to get away from devotional service, or blame devotional service for our problems, the more we will not understand Krishna, and the more we will be victims of the illusory energy. So basically, for us, practitioners of bhakti yoga, devotional service is the make it or break it reality. Any problems can be cured by devotional service. And when there's no devotional service, all problems will overwhelm us. So therefore, we're always looking, what is the service? How are you absorbed in your service? How can you improve your service? Another mistake that we all make is thinking, I don't need any advice how to improve my service. And this way we seal ourselves off into our own little world and we become, once again, easy victims for Maya. We all need to help each other and inspire one another how to serve Krishna and realize the infinite value of devotional service. And then we'll be safe from the actions of the illusory energy, which are very treacherous. Srila Prabhupada once explained that the job of Maya is to appear more attractive than Krishna. If you think about it, you can see what's going on in your life. There is a force or an energy that's presenting illusions to you, conjuring up images to you, and trying to appear, trying to make those images and illusions appear to you as more attractive than Krishna. To take your mind away, to take your attention away. Just think, you could be doing this. Isn't that better? Just think, that could be happening to you. Isn't that better? If you're always absorbed in devotional service, however, time after time again, you'll get realization. There's nothing better I could be doing than serving Krishna. Whether it's washing pots, sweeping the floor, whatever. I am Krishna's servant. I'm so glad to have a chance to serve Krishna. In fact, if you have a chance to be overwhelmed in Krishna's service, that's a rare opportunity. Now that's something we may not appreciate until we enter a situation in which it can happen, believe it or not. You try your best to find something to do for Krishna, and somehow or other, you can't find enough to do. Maybe if you ever become ill in devotional service, physically sick, or something like that, there are situations do come about where you're just doing your best, eager to take up responsibility, you're eager to take up some mission, and you just can't seem to get your hands onto anything. And then you begin to realize devotional service is under Krishna's personal control. I've got to really beg Krishna for the chance to give my life to devotional service. I took it so casually before. I thought, hey, service is everywhere. It's like, you know, it's like water. What's the big deal, you know? If I don't feel like doing service, I don't do it. There'll always be some opportunity around. But every once in a while, Krishna will show you that all devotional service is his internal potency. And of course, the leader of the internal potency, the master of devotional service, that is Srimati Radharani. She is the best devotee of Krishna. She knows better than any other devotee how to please Krishna. Therefore, Srimati Radharani, she's the internal potency personified. So we may think that it's all up to me whether I want to engage or not. But the fact that we have an opportunity to serve Krishna, that's Krishna's personal loving arrangement. And sometimes just to show us how it's not under our control, we may have experiences in which we try so hard to serve and to find service, and it just seems not to happen. And then we just realize, well, at least I can chant Hare Krishna. I can read. That's also devotional service. But anything else I try to do, it just doesn't seem to be happening right now. Krishna's showing you, never take devotional service cheaply. And then, of course, the next time we get an opportunity for service, we hold on to it like it's our dying breath. Never again will I take devotional service cheaply. So Karma Yoga, Chapter 3, is focusing on action, activity. We want to know how always to be active for Krishna's pleasure. And we want to avoid how to be active for Maya's pleasure. So we have a right to question our spiritual master about this, just like Arjuna is questioning Krishna. I don't understand, Krishna. You're talking so much about intelligence, yet at the same time you're stressing action, fighting in a war. Please, clear this up for me. We have a right to ask questions like that. You mean you really don't think I'm engaged enough? You mean you really think there's some service I could do better? You mean you really think the service I have now is can be improved? We should always be wanting to ask in that way. And don't think that somebody has to be dancing with the gopis in the rasa dance in order to be able to answer those questions. Don't think that, you know, unless I see that you're playing with the cowherd boys in Vrindavan, I don't think you're able to give me any advice about how to improve my service. That's a very presumptuous attitude, which will make you bereft of a lot of help in Krishna consciousness. Anyone who knows Bhagavad Gita can give advice on how to more enthusiastically serve Krishna. That is the great gift of Srila Prabhupada's movement. To have a supply of senior devotees who can point out, you're not doing enough, or you could be doing more, or you could be doing this better. Anyone who is truly humble, they want to take advantage of all the advice they can get. But, of course, in order to take advice about our service, we have to appreciate how rare an opportunity it is and how short our life is. When there's complacency, then we think, oh, what does it matter? I'm doing something, at least at some time of the day, I'm doing some kind of service. But that's not the goal of Bhagavad Gita, to do a little bit of service, a little time of the day. Of course, naturally, there are going to be many people who won't serve Krishna at all, and there'll be many people who just do a little bit of service. But we're talking about the goal of Bhagavad Gita. Without criticizing anybody who's, in our estimation, maybe only doing a little service, at the same time, we always have to present what the goal is. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mamsa Yoga Vicharina, Bhakti Yogena Sevate, Sagaran Samati Jaitan, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. For one who is always engaged in devotional service without interruption, that person is beyond the modes of material nature. And we certainly want to be beyond the modes of material nature. And anyone can do that. So any questions on this verse? Bhagavad Gita is an action book, but action with a cool head. Prabhupada will explain later in the chapter that famous statement that religion without philosophy is sentiment, and philosophy without religion is mental speculation. Bhakti Yoga involves both devotional attitudes, devotional sentiments, as well as philosophy. Knowledge with a great intent to please Krishna, that is bhakti. A great effort to please Krishna in a knowledgeable way. Now, Jnana Yoga, that's simply, let me understand metaphysics. Let me understand various knowledge of material and spiritual existence. And Karma Yoga can simply mean, let me make some offering of my activities to God. I have no idea of God. I have no idea what constitutes a pleasing offering, but let me do something. But Bhakti combines both the devotional desire to give to Krishna and knowledge of Krishna. That is why it's so attractive. Any other questions on this verse?
You might be just doing some satisfaction now. What's the practical application to it? You might not have the desire to do it, you might not have the taste to do it. It's just like having a cold shower. You might see the benefit to have a cold shower, but how do you get it now? I mean, how do you come to that point of 24 hours of meditation devotional service? I mean, there's also night across the devotional service, hearing, chanting, glorifying, sort of thing. Can we just read on that?
That's why we have temple presidents. They're looking at everybody and seeing who's engaged and who's not, and they figure out the ways and means how everybody can do more. And of course, everyone's naturally eager to hear from the temple president how they can do more.
What's
equal to that? Nice turn! They're always pounding on his door. Why haven't you given me any advice lately? I need to know how to do more. Then they harass him over the telephone. Why haven't you criticized my service? Are you sure I'm doing this right? We don't want to rest easy. That is a great mistake. When you're resting easy, you're putting your faith and you lose your energy that I don't have to push ahead for Krishna's pleasure. Everything will be all right. I'm doing some service. But you see, there is an influence known as Maya, consisting of a three modes of material nature, that is active, that's always trying to cover us over and pull us down. So we've got to always push forward. Otherwise, we get caught. So there's no point in saying, well, I've seen a lot of devotees who tried to work hard, and then they just took a bit of a break and they got caught. Therefore, what's the use of me trying to work hard? We have to understand the science of bhakti, to keep pushing forward with a cool brain, with skill, with knowledge. That's what Krishna's trying to get you to do in Bhagavad Gita. Have a devotional attitude to push ahead and have the knowledge how to do it right.
During the concert, it's a long rest, and it offers simply satisfaction as opposed to the practicing of the long rest.
Okay, so what do you actually mean by a sprint?
Well, I suppose by becoming fully engaged in artificial way.
Well, can you give me an example of being fully engaged in artificial way?
I suppose trying to be a 24-hour service.
You mean not sleeping? At all? Do you have any examples of that, somebody who's serving 24 hours a day without sleeping? I'm serious, if you have to give me an example, because I know these things are batted around without any concrete examples.
Say, for maintaining service, for example, like getting involved in service and find a passion of doing something out or establishing something, or then trying to maintain it for a long period of time to come through.
Well, that's why we chant Hare Krishna with attention. We're supposed to hear the Hare Krishna mantra. If we're actually hearing the mantra, we're getting spiritual strength. And we should be able to take some advice how to execute our service. Just like I was talking with one devotee today, and he was explaining that when he does a particular service, he just really wants that to be his castle, his kingdom. And in other words, doesn't want anybody to tell him how to do it. Now, chances are, if you go on like that, you're going to burn out. Because you're not taking advantage of the advice of persons who have much experience in how to do things and what's the proper way. So if we're always fully engaged in Krishna's service, under direction, and we're listening, how can we go wrong? Please explain that to me. How can you go wrong if you're always serving Krishna with appropriate attention to your hearing and chanting and listening to higher advice? How can you go wrong? What could happen to you? You're coming to the temple program, you're chanting your rounds, really hearing them. You're trying your best to assist Prabhupada's movement, and you're listening to others saying, actually, you could do it better this way. Or actually, you do need, you know, you should get at least 6 hours rest because, you know, you're getting a little too, getting a bit spaced out. or I don't think it will ruin your project if you spend the Sunday afternoon with your family. I mean, what's the big deal, you know? I really fail to understand. Or, you shouldn't do this service like it's only dependent on you and you don't need to listen to anybody else. By the way, we've been doing these kind of services for at least 20 years, and there's no need to reinvent the wheel every year. You know what I mean? There's really, once you study Bhagavad Gita, you'll see there's no great mystery to a devotee who wants to serve Krishna in a humble way. Don't we all remember what it was like when we were new devotees? Are there any new devotees here? You're always listening to others. I really don't know anything here. I've got to listen to others, and you're always thinking, if I could just put my dhoti on in under 15 minutes, it would really be great. Why should we lose that attitude? The problem is, we think we've become older devotees and we don't need to listen to anybody. And then, bhakti yoga does become difficult, as Prabhupada explains in either this chapter or the fifth chapter, that to offer your activities to Krishna is difficult in this world. But if you have guidance, the process becomes easy. So generally, you'll notice anybody who has a problem that really becomes dangerous is because they don't want to take advice. Try to notice that one. You'll see it's true. Pride. Which argument is that? But what do you mean by pacing yourself? See, I asked you what you meant by sprinting ahead. No, no. You have to describe what you mean.
Well, so when it comes to the first time, there's a lot of enthusiasm to see the
initial
way for everybody. And then after some time, when the word finds itself coursing, they see it going in some way.
If you have direction, you can do it. Rupa Goswami says, Utsaha Nishchedharya. First there's enthusiasm, then patience and determination. Without enthusiasm, you're going nowhere. If you take direction from the senior Vaishnavas, from the temple president, from your spiritual master, how can you go wrong? Do you think Krishna is that cruel? That now, don't get me wrong, there are always some tough spots, but you won't get knocked out of it. There's always in this world some upheavals, but you won't be knocked off course or put into inertia. You see what I'm trying to say? I never said there won't be tough moments. But you'll keep on going. And I think you've seen examples of that, haven't you? Yes? So we should remember those examples.
And then we get to that point of actually not hearing or taking instructions. So it seems like at that particular point, then material desires enter one's can in the heart. And because one's not taking shelter, then one starts to contemplate those material desires and actually drops down a level. And this, you know, society is starting to level.
Oh, I see. That's what you mean by pacing yourself.
I don't know.
In other words, it's, I can't be too spiritual. This is where I am. I have mature desires. I need to be fulfilled. I accept Krishna as God at this particular point. If I don't actually get these things together and feel satisfaction in this thing and be a little peaceful with myself, then how can I actually think of God and Krishna?
There's no peace in this world. And you'll never be satisfied with material desires. What may happen is that you'll become so frustrated trying to satisfy your material desires that you'll say, hey, let me get back to the old process of bhakti yoga again. But you will never be satisfied. Don't you remember Maharaj Yayati from the 9th canto? Him and Devayani? What was his conclusion? He told her, before he told her the he-goat, she-goat story. Remember that? Huh? You remember? The he-goat, she-goat story?
We're not up. I'm living that very
much. He said, I've been enjoying sex life for thousands of years, and I'm still not satisfied. So at that moment, he explained to his wife that I have to actually treat you properly. Let's be honest. Satisfaction in this way is not possible. So, under the influence of the illusory energy, you have faith in Maya, but you don't have faith in devotional service. In other words, what you're saying, I'm trying to explain what you're really doing. Okay, I have some material desires. I have to work it out. I've got to honor them and then I'll be peaceful. So that means, honoring them means I shall have faith in Maya that my head won't be cut off. I shall engage in Maya, the submarine, not too deep now. No way am I going to become a gross karmi. Just go down a little bit, become a little peaceful, and then pop right back up at the end of my life, ready to take sannyas. It doesn't work like that. Prabhupada once described Maya like this. She invites you. You lay your head on my lap, and then you do that, and you go to sleep, and Maya cuts your head off. Time and time again, that happens. But each person, under the influence of Maya, thinks my case will be different. You have to read Prabhupada's books and convince yourself. You'll get no succor, you'll get no solace from the illusory energy. You'll simply get headaches. But the invitation doesn't look like that. You have to discriminate between the invitation of Maya and the reality. Now, how does the invitation look? Looks good, doesn't it? Oh, my dear devotee, you've labored so hard in the temple for many years. Everyone knows how staunch you were. Now it's time to kind of balance yourself. Now it's time to just step back and take a better look at yourself, separate from devotional service, of course. Fear not. Just come a little bit into my clutches. You'll feel warmth, you'll feel security, you'll feel fulfillment, and then once you receive my blessings, once you've received the blessings of the Lucy energy, then you may go back to your service with renewed enthusiasm. Does that sound like our philosophy? Do you read that anywhere in Bhagavad Gita? No. So where did this philosophy come from? It's not in Bhagavad Gita. Now, mind you, this has nothing to do with compassion for those who, have fallen off. That's another thing, understand? That's another thing. But what the Krishna conscious reality is, that's what we're talking about now. We want to be full of compassion. God forbid it could be one of us. But at the same time, we don't want to change the philosophy. We don't want to change Bhagavad Gita. You have to read Prabhupada's books and study how it is the illusory energy acts, what the promises illusory energy makes, the appearances of the illusory energy takes in your mind. It's amazing how we will trust Maya. It's quite extraordinary. How we'll feel a possible shelter there. That's why we need association devotees. That's why we need you all need help. It's amazing. We become very cynical about devotional service, but then our trust in Maya increases. That's what happens. As Carl Sumber was saying, we stop listening to advice and guidance, and material desires start to grow, and we become fascinated by our own material desires, or at least we begin to take them very seriously. Everybody who comes to the door has material desires, but some accept guidance how to deal with them, and some don't. This is a hospital. Some listen to the doctors, some don't. That's really the way you can discriminate. There will be rough moments for everybody, even for those who are trying to be humble and listen. But those who listen, they'll cross over even the difficult bumps in the road. And there are examples of that. So we have to really cleanse our consciousness of this skepticism about devotional service. Oh, just look at so-and-so. He or she worked hard for so many years and now they're fried. Bhagavad Gita is about full absorption in devotional service. Using your intelligence. Intelligence means, as Arjuna did, to accept guidance, to ask questions. Krishna, wait a minute now. I can't see the difference. And this is an important question. I can't see the difference between withdrawing and contemplation and active engagement in service. I'm confused about this. And Krishna explains. We're worshiping Lord Chaitanya. We're glorifying Lord Chaitanya. What did Lord Chaitanya freely distribute? Pure love of Krishna. Pure love of Krishna means pure devotional service. So on the one hand, we're saying, Jai Nitai, Jai Gaur Nitai. On the other hand, we like to run away from devotional service. It's not Lord Chaitanya's movement. And even if we did feel, I was so sincere, I tried to absorb myself in devotional service, and then this happened and that happened. Still we should say, so what? I want more service. Isn't that Lord Chaitanya's prayer? Krishna, you can treat me however you want. I'm your servant unconditionally. So why? Even if I try to serve sincerely, I listen to all the authorities, and now my life is just not working out the way I thought it should work out. Even if you think that way, then you still say, so what? I had a chance to serve Krishna. How rare that is. I want another chance. Never mind, Krishna. You trample me. You embrace me. I just want a chance to serve. That's a devotee. And those are the kind of devotees who will carry on Prabhupada's mission. So many times, I think it's in the seventh canto, Prabhupada writes in about four purports in a row, that unless one is low in the straw on a street, one will have great difficulty continuing in devotional service. What does it mean to be low in the straw on a street? It means you're going to have to undergo some ordeals sometimes. You're going to have to be, how shall I say, you're going to have to swallow soap and blow bubbles sometimes. But you love service so much that it's all right, Krishna. I'm yours eternally. With that kind of attitude, you'll see Lord Chaitanya's blessings. You'll see Srila Prabhupada's blessings, the Guru Maharaj's blessings. All those things will be revealed. So we all have an attitude problem. And a rigorous study of Bhagavad Gita is a wonderful cure for attitude problems. And if you read Nectar of Devotion, you'll become enlivened in the super excellence of devotional service. You see, the danger is we're doing what Arjuna didn't do. How did the perfection of Bhagavad Gita unfold to Arjuna? When did things really start rolling? When Arjuna stopped prescribing his own prescription. Arjuna said, Krishna, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm bewildered. Now I'm your patient. You write the prescription. Otherwise, before that, what was Arjuna doing? He was explaining to the doctor, to Krishna, oh, we can't fight because of this reason, because of that reason, it's not good. Finally, he just gave up and said, okay, Krishna, you're the doctor. You write the prescription. So as soon as we try to write our own prescription in terms of judging our own medical progress without relying on superior guidance, then, yes, we're heading into trouble. And these things are not intimate truths like Madhurya Ras or something. Social service is practical. Just like this devotee I was talking to today. He was feeling a certain way, taking it very seriously. And I just pointed out that, you know, it's good you want to serve, but it could be that someone can give you advice how to do this better. It just could be, you know. Maybe. And you could be avoiding yourself a lot of headaches. You see, just by having that attitude, Krishna will help you. Bhakti is a lot to do with attitude. Just by having the attitude that I can, I'm not the all in all, I'm not the Lord. That opens the way to spiritual intelligence coming from the super soul, even if we don't consciously recognize the voice of the super soul. So we should never blame, even if we've been through very difficult situations, we should never blame devotional service. We should be happy. Krishna, thank you for giving me a chance to serve you. I'll try better next time. The temple might have blown off into the air. all the devotees might have scattered to the far-off corners of the universe, but I had a chance to serve you. Here's the next chance. That's the attitude, by the way, he's just trying to give us. What does Krishna tell Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita? You have a right to your service, but you cannot be attached to the results. We don't like these verses, do we? You have a right to surrender to me fully, but you can't say what the results are. You're not allowed to be attached to the results. In fact, Krishna tells Arjuna point blank, victory or defeat is not your concern. That's bhakti. And it takes many years to drag us around to that understanding. Through thick and thin, trials and tribulations, one day we're going to realize, I'm so happy to serve Krishna, and victory or defeat's not my concern. Now, we'll do anything to get away from that realization, and Krishna will do everything to keep us going for that realization. So sometimes devotees do get a bit weary of trying for that realization. But if they stay in good association, under good guidance, they won't get weary. Yes?
My question is, sometimes you have a nice skill to be approached to the senior peak and not to touch my son. And I decided to some difference to the advice. How much can one provide from their own medicine? Also, I don't know if you're not like the intelligence, but you must be just a little bit of your own intelligence.
You're right, because ultimately everything is filtered through your own consciousness. So what I'm stressing is, if you try to be sincere, Krishna won't cheat you. Try to be humble and sincere, and through all the ups and downs, Krishna will not cheat you.
The advantage, obviously, we have to point of contact. You see, if this is Krishna with my students, how we can make a decision ourselves.
Oh, that's very dangerous. But once again, let's not make matters so confidential and so highfalutin. You have that expression here, highfalutin? Okay. Let's not make things so highfalutin. Do you think it's not possible for anybody in this room to see that whether you're fully engaged in social service or not? Probably 90% of the devotees here can tell whether you're fully engaged or not. Dr. Michael can, but 90% think he's working hard, he's always busy in Krishna service in an intelligent way. This devotee is, he's taking care of his family and doing so many preaching activities and so much service and so many offerings and puja and this and that. Things are obvious. It's not a great mystery, but we've kind of made it a great mystery. You know, this full engagement in devotional service, it's a very risky, dangerous, mysterious thing. Strange alien creatures you have to be very careful of. Where does this attitude come from?
I was thinking it was like you said it's confidential, but questions maybe ask something different. This would be a lot of these chances of different things like that.
Well, now obviously you're going to go to the persons who you trust, and the one you trust the most, that's what you're going to accept the most, right? That's your right. But what I'm talking about is full engagement in devotional service, because when there's full engagement in devotional service, you'll see a lot of sincerity come out of you that you never thought you had. So, sincerity without full engagement in devotional service is a bit suspicious. Therefore, when you increase the activity, increase the efforts to try to please Krishna, then real sincerity comes very nicely from that. I think it's time for us to end. If there's more questions, this is a very good point. Very important point. I can see you all are getting at the root of something that's kind of some fog that's been in the air for a long time. If you can get to the root of it, you guys can really get going. It's a conspiracy about illusion energy. How to minimize your service without, you know, making you feel you're blooped or anything. How to make it ineffectual while still wearing dhotis and saris. This is what Maya does. These guys, I can't get them to bloop, but at least I can make them useless or almost useless while wearing dhotis and saris. They'll be so worried about pacing themselves, not sprinting, not burning out, that they'll never do anything. And they'll spend their whole day talking about it, too. You know, so-and-so, he didn't pace himself, and, you know, I didn't pace myself, and he had to go, you know, spend all day talking about this, they don't do anything. These tricks are always going on. What was true when we were young devotees is still true now. And we just need some help to realize that point. Now, I'm not saying that there's never any tough moments, there's never any times when we might get a little unenthusiastic, but still, the truth is the truth. Yes? Well, these things are true of most people. Krishna says four kinds of persons approach him, and all of them should be considered meritorious. But the fact is, as one advances, the material desires diminish. But how do you advance? By full engagement in devotional service. So if we're concerned with material motives, then we should make sure we're fully engaged. And then we'll have the incentive, we'll have the good fortune through our full engagement to be able to ask pertinent questions and hear the answers. But without only being active in Krishna's service, we won't have the spiritual intelligence to ask good questions or hear the answers. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Tadvidi Pranipathena, Tadvidi Prasnena Sevaya. If you want to know the truth, service has to be combined with the questions. Prabhupada explained that without service, you won't be able to ask the right questions or hear the answers. Service is the medium by which bhakti is assimilated. Knowledge of bhakti is assimilated through service. Just like the lining of the stomach is the medium by which food is assimilated. Similarly, bhakti, devotional service, is the medium by which transcendental knowledge is assimilated. So whatever you do, don't push away devotional service. Never push that away. Thinking, it'll make me more sincere, it'll make me more intelligent, it'll make me have less motives. That's a trick of mine. Fill your day with service, and then analyze how you can do it better with more pure motives. Isn't that the... Isn't that good for
consciousness? It was easy in the beginning. It's easy now, isn't it? When you decided to start a Brahmacharya, and everything was pretty straightforward. You know, you just got up in the morning, been out of book distribution, spiritual sky, so on and so forth. But it seemed like our society was moving them through, the greenhouse stuff. In other words, there's more greenhouses within our society, so it seemed to be a balance. What is spiritual life? Where before I was in Brahmacharya, I was engaged 24 hours a day in the same kind of mission. But now I have responsibilities of husband, wife, children. So I'd be the child, and I can't go and do full distribution and full duty worship. So it just seems to be.
But those aren't the only.
What is the devotional service? Is looking after my wife, devotional service is looking after the kids, is getting a job.
We should try for as full engagement as we possibly can. Whether one is a brahmachari or a householder, try for as much devotional service as you possibly can, and always be eager to listen how you can do more. And there are householders who are experts at doing a lot of service. There are brahmacharis or experts at doing no service. Water seeks its own level in that you'll find out who you want to associate with based on your desires. There are householders who are able to do lots. If you're serious about that as a householder, you'll find out from them. How do you do it? And if you're not serious, you know what happens. You look for those householders who don't do much and are expert at justifying it. Yeah, don't be a fanatic, Just step back and, just really think about what you're doing and you don't want to burn out.
So it's all there in the construction stuff, explaining what the greenhouse mission is and so on and so forth. But it seems to be this real bad stigma about giving to the second half like giving to the temple. Right. And who's just the temple? It's the temple presence. Who are the deities? Sort of like this lack of.
Who are the deities?
Sort of like this. When you mention the word ISKCON, it seems like, well, that's ISKCON. But what is ISKCON? I don't want to give to ISKCON, I don't want to give to the temple. That's just for the people living in the temple.
Okay, you may. As a householder, you have an income. I hope this gets to be a big problem that so many householders are looking where to get their income. So, okay. Certainly you'll find somebody can serve Krishna. You can contribute for making new clothes for the deities. You can buy books for the brahmacharis to distribute. Or buy books. Put clothes on the deities. So many things you can do that you wouldn't feel you're compromising your principles or whatever they are. Supporting projects of Vaishnavas you can't stand. Gotta be careful these days. Where your Lakshmi goes to, all those millions of dollars that we're given. Gotta make sure they don't go to a Vaishnava when we ate. He said it's Prabhupada's project, but we know it's just going to him. Or even if he's not spending it on sense gratification, he's spending it on his idea of how to serve Prabhupada. gift for the deities, buy books for the brahmacharis, buy a sankirtan bus for the brahmacharis. Wonderful poor brahmacharis. How could you go wrong by getting them a traveling bus or this or that or something? Then you wouldn't be giving directly to the temple president. He just wants to control everything.
In other words, there appears in general situations my
opportunities to steal. A devotee, what does he see everywhere? Opportunities to serve. If you don't see opportunities to serve, it means there's some big problems in the devotee department. All right, so even if somebody feels, I don't want to give to this because of this reason, that reason, there is at least three things in every temple that you could support without any druthers, without any, feeling you've compromised the regular principles. Right? Isn't there? Sure. So we all need to realize we should be inducing one another to perform devotional service, and the more service we do, the less problems there'll be. That truth is eternally the truth. It's not relative truth. And if you keep that conviction uppermost, Krishna promises you, I will give you the intelligence how to serve me. Without that conviction, you'll never get intelligence from Krishna. It's true. The bona fide spiritual master wants to train his disciples so that ultimately they can hear from Super Soul. But without firm conviction that devotional service is supreme in all circumstances, you'll never hear from Super Soul. Any other questions? It's very exciting if we can send this fog away for good. Yes? That's explained very nicely by Prabhupada in the 18th chapter of the Gita. Krishna says, Machatasava Durgani, in all circumstances, be fully conscious of me, and that way you'll cross over all obstacles of your life by my grace. And the purport, Prabhupada explains, to be fully conscious of Krishna in your actions means to be thinking, I have been appointed by Krishna to do this service. This service has been given to me by Krishna. Let me do it with my full concentration. I was speaking to another devotee today, and I was saying, well, you don't look that busy to me, and also it doesn't look like your consciousness is focused on what you're doing. And therefore, naturally, there's going to be some problems that you've just been telling me about. But nevertheless, Prabhupada always stressed that first become active, and then gradually we can work on the refinements. But if you're not physically active, you have no chance. So what I notice is going on a lot is devotees, they criticize full physical engagement because they say, you may be fully engaged physically, but you're not really focused on what, you're not really thinking of Krishna. Therefore, it's best not to do anything. In other words, until you get to the point where you really think of Krishna, then you can start doing things. That wasn't Prabhupada's policy. Just start doing something, and then you're hearing about Krishna, you're listening to higher direction, and gradually you'll become refined while in the fire of devotional service. That is the Hare Krishna movement. It's also a prime difference between Prabhupada's line and some of the other Gaudiya lines, too. Prabhupada stressed action in Krishna consciousness. And we've never seen any more successful way to bring Westerners, especially, to the spiritual plane. Because we are not born in some simple village in India. We are born in very complicated material societies, and we have lots of complications that have to be fully engaged in a dynamic way in Krishna's service. And Srila Prabhupada was the master of creating dynamic engagements. And as soon as we become cynical about those dynamic engagements, What chance do we have?
Sees that when we're attracted to the material energy, there's more attraction, there's more sort of nice feeling, and appears as an observing the objects of the senses, the material objects, and there is seeing the deity of each other.
Right. This is a point I myself am meditating on. I'm analyzing this point. The presentations of Maya, they appear so juicy compared sometimes to, as you say, darshan of the deities or chanting the holy name. This lets you know that you cannot conquer over Maya with your own strength. The appearances are too powerful. There's only one way to conquer over Maya. You've got to surrender to the source of Maya. It's very humiliating, isn't it? Therefore, Krishna says in the Gita, Daiviesha Gunamayi, Mama Mayadra, Mamayi Papajante, Maya Mesham Sarankite. This material energy of mine is almost impossible to overcome, but if you surrender to me, I'll turn the heat off. But you're right, it just looks so inconceivably impossible. The projections in your mind by the Dushya energy, and the feebleness in your mind of visions of Krishna and Krishna's pleasure are so weak, and the material energy appears so strong and vibrant. But as soon as you say, Krishna, I can't beat this on my own, I'm appealing to you, then you'll see what happens. That's our process. Prabhupada said, that's the main difference between himself and his disciples. He said, I'm always praying to Krishna every moment, please don't let me fall down. In other words, I'm always appealing at every moment to the master of Maya, please turn your Maya off.
Krishna hasn't become an issue in our life. Just like in the picture in the Bhagavatam, it's got two birds in the tree. The one bird is enjoying the material energy, and the other bird is witnessing the super soul. But then when the bird turns to the super soul, there's some reciprocation. So it seems we go along with devotional service, but coming to that point of actually recognizing who does control Maya and doing it for Maya, at that particular point, it seems like the practice of a whole new chapter.
Who controls Maya and turning to
that control, by turning to Krishna. But it seems like within our lives as devotees, that person is very rare, but actually, in other words, most people are pulled by the way and accept, well, Maya's, there's some taste there for Maya. There's no taste for devotional service, so at least there's some taste in Maya, so let me go Maya's way. Now, it's very rare, also Krishna said that it's very rare, and many thousands of years living into this triumph of conviction, hardly one knows the truth. So, it's coming to that point, which also Krishna says is birth after birth. One lives in knowledge, surrenders underneath. So it seems like we're dealing with a lot of conditioned souls and devotees at all sorts of levels.
But we're also dealing with Lord Chaitanya, and Prabhupada said that, why is it that, although out of thousands among persons, only one may try to know about Krishna, and out of those few that may try to know, only one really knows Krishna? Why is it that we have come into that position of the very, very few who can know Krishna? Because of Lord Chaitanya. Everything that you were just presenting, everything that you just presented, makes sense up to the point of Lord Chaitanya. That was Prabhupada's answer always. Because of Lord Chaitanya, it's freely available. But he, according to what you were presenting, Prabhupada would agree, up until the point of Lord Chaitanya. And because of Lord Chaitanya, the flood of love of Godhead is a fact. But we have to keep ourselves from becoming, from isolating ourselves from the flood. No one knows Krishna, but Lord Chaitanya is giving Krishna freely. I remember Prabhupada lecturing about that in Atlanta. And a minute and a half into his lecture, his just tears shot from his eyes, and he just stopped his lecture. He was explaining how, just take shelter of Lord Chaitanya and be happy. No one knows Krishna, yet still Lord Chaitanya is giving out love of Krishna. How is this possible? So that is why we're having some success. Because of Lord Chaitanya, because of Prabhupada bringing Lord Chaitanya's teachings and instructions. Otherwise, you're right, it would be impossible. So those who are forgetting the super excellence of devotional service are forgetting Lord Chaitanya, who does make the impossible possible. Yes?
Prabhupada wants to give a benediction to Peter on the ground. Lord Shiva said, why should we bother? He wasn't able to recognize the value of Prabhupada insisted, so Lord Chaitanya, Lord Shiva, he sent down a mountain or something that's filled with valuable jewels. And he presented to his community before this beggar. And so the beggar saw it and not realizing what was in it, he just sold it for a couple of rupees. In the same way, we don't appreciate the value of what's in it.
And that's why we need association and good advice to not take things cheaply and forget the inconceivable opportunity that's been granted to us. Prabhupada also compared Lord Chaitanya's mercy to a sun shower. You have sun showers here?
Yeah.
So generally there must be clouds in the sky for rain to fall. But Lord Chaitanya's mercy means no preconditions, yet the rain's coming. No one deserves it, no one's qualified, yet the rain of mercy is coming. So that's the deep conviction Prabhupada had in Lord Chaitanya's mercy and what he wants to instill in us. Any last questions?
Yes.
Well, I was going to have confusion going down and talking about his real
things. Things are very bad. And the only way to get out of making offenses is by saying forgiveness. But we shouldn't let things happen to that degree, that slowing down that offenses. We don't want things to get like that. We want to help our fellow God brothers and God sisters never to come to that point. At the same time, we don't get this. The unfortunate thing does happen. You don't want to agitate the situation by agitating them.
Yeah.